Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, February 8, 2019. Fresh fighting in Yei River State leaves a number of civilians dead.
The whole of the south of Yei is actually in danger. People are fleeing. Let somebody not say this is rumors. A number of forces are engaged in serious fighting in the area. So it is only Yei now which is bleeding.
And the government of Japan pledged to support the implementation of the revitalized peace deal.
And this support is not the only support we pledged. Primary responsibility to implement all this agreement lies in the South Sudanese.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Japan has agreed to donate $1 million to the pre-transitional committee to help jumpstart the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement. The IGAD special envoy to South Sudan says Japan is the first country to donate money to fund the implementation of the peace deal. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio has more from Juba.
South Sudan's Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elie Lumro, a member of the National Pre-Transitional Committee, or NPTC, says Japan's donation will be wired to the committee's account from funds that Tokyo gave IGAD last year to facilitate the deal's implementation in these last few months of the pre-transitional period. But before the money is released, Lumro says the committee must present a work plan.
Prior to the transfer of the above funds, the NPTC will present a work plan on the usage of the funds and consult with IGAD and the Embassy of Japan. The work plan needs to be in compliance with the provisions of the revitalized agreement.
The NPTC must also present a monthly report on how the funds have been distributed if it is to receive more funds from the Japanese government. Seiji Okada, the Japanese ambassador to South Sudan, says his country is proud to support the agreement.
Japan can support the actual implementation in here. And this support is not the only support we pledged. Primary responsibility to implement all this agreement lies in the South Sudanese.
IGAD special envoy to South Sudan, Ismail Weiss, says the Japanese initiative should be a door opener for other countries to provide financial support for implementing the deal.
I'm really thankful that the government of Japan is willing and agreed to kickstart the operationalization of the implementation process. NPTC is tasked with a very huge responsibility.
James Okuk, a political science lecturer at the University of Juba, says the government depleted its foreign currency reserves and had gone into debt with other countries, including the oil companies, to finance the war. Debt the government must still pay off, presumably with profits from new oil production money.
The whole thing takes you to the blunder that was done to get rid of the reserve in the central bank and also to start taking loans and borrowing from others, especially these oil companies. Yes, the government is producing oil, but this oil has been auctioned in advance and they have to give it to those people so that they settle their debts. So this is the situation that we are. And probably we might be in these debts up to April. Maybe after April, this is where you can think of government having real cash.
South Sudan's current crude oil production stands at 130,000 barrels per day. Okuk says it could be some times before the government of South Sudan has actual cash reserves.
When the peace agreement was signed, part of the pressure on the government why they accepted to sign this peace agreement, although they call it a bad agreement, but they signed because they thought it is war that took away the money. So if they sign the agreement, the dollars will come flying back immediately. And then maybe the coffers of the government will get filled up and then we move ahead like it used to be in 2005 with the CPA. This time around, the peace agreement was signed. We didn't see any dollar coming flying in. And even the opening of more oil fields to pump more oil into the market takes longer time because it's more technical than political statement. And what politicians say is not necessarily what is on the ground. But then sometimes they try to calm down the people and say, oh, things are good. But if you ask the technician, are they good, they will tell you no. It will take us longer time for us to really have a real pumping of oil in those fields.
The government announced recently it deposited $1 million and 1 million South Sudanese pounds into the account of the NPTC to implement the peace deal. Okuk says overall that is not much money, and now time is running out for this money to be used as expected. The National Pre-Transitional Committee, the body tasked to implement and monitor the deal in the 8 months pre-transitional period, is left with less than 3 months to finish their work before the parties to the deal form a revitalized government of national unity. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The timeline of the peace agreement signed last year is running month behind schedule, and major issues like setting internal state boundaries and cantonment sites have not been addressed. Brian Adeba, the Deputy Director of Policy at the Enough Project, says despite the resumption of oil production in South Sudan, the government is struggling to fund the agreement.
If you look at what has happened with implementing some of the benchmarks that were supposed to have been achieved midway into the agreement, we are behind on almost all the significant issues. Troop cantonment, for instance, is far behind. The issue of the boundary commissions, very contentious issues that are supposed to be addressed right now, we're still very far behind. The positive thing, of course, is that fighting has considerably reduced. But that's besides the point. The point really is to get the agreement moving forward, and that's not happening. One key impediment to implementing the benchmarks in the agreement is, of course, lack of political will and also finance. So, for instance, troop cantonment requires a lot of money. And security arrangements and the implementation of everything around that requires a lot of money. But that is not happening because the government doesn't have the money really to do that. You saw yesterday that, or this week, that they only put in a paltry $1 million. And they, the donor community is very, very reluctant to step in to support this peace agreement. And mostly that is because of the government's own previous record on managing donor funding. The egregious corruption that is prevalent in the government is what is deterring donor support for the peace agreement at this particular point. Now, one would, of course, suppose that with the utterances by the oil minister, Ezekiel Lol, that oil production is going to be scaled up, and it's going, so production is going to increase to pre-war levels.
And that was going to be my next question to you. You said the government doesn't have any money, but the South Sudan has been pumping oil at least for the last few months.
Yes, that's true. There is there's been a reopening of some oil wells, and somewhere in the summer last year, they said by the end of the year, oil production will go back to pre-war levels, which is about 300 or 350,000 barrels per day. However, up to now, the scale-up in production is still lagging, and we're nowhere close to the pre-war levels as promised by the finance minister. And therefore, there is not going to be any money accrued from oil sales at this particular point. Whatever comes in is going to be very diminished, and it's not going to be enough. And that is reflected in the paltry amount that the government has deposited for the peace implementation, which is $1 million, which is far below what has been recommended by the technical committees in the, that are implementing tenets of the agreement.
And where are Western partners in the conversation about funding?
Western funders are nowhere in the picture. They are reluctant to support any peace any peace efforts that require money from them. They will not be supporting that. It's been very, very clear for those of us who are outside Sudan who've interacted with these diplomats from these countries. The message really is that they're not going to be funding any of these peace related activities. Partly, one of the reasons for that is lack of confidence in the government's ability for accountability. And when we talk about corruption, This is the effect of corruption. People say sometimes that when the issue of calling the government to account for how it spends public money, people tend to politicize it. But this is the effect right now as we see. Had we put in place measures to arrest corruption in South Sudan, to hold people accountable, we would have by now created the confidence required for other people who want to support South Sudan to step in. Right now, that is missing.
That's Brian Adeva, Deputy Director of Policy at the Washington-based ENAF Project. He was speaking with my colleague, Ayen Deng Bior, this past hour. Now to our story in Yei. A known number of civilians were killed and hundreds of others displaced during fighting this week between a combined force of the South Sudan government and SPLA-IO forces who are fighting the National Salvation Front rebels led by General Thomas Cirilo. Residents say the clashes continue in several villages of Otogo County in Yei River State. The civilians accused both sides of looting property and setting houses on fire. Daniel Friday Martin reports for VOA from Yei Town.
Several villages fleeing violence in Indukuri, Morsak, Goja, and Ombasi villages of Otogo County tell South Sudan in Focus that armed forces are still fighting in the area. Undikuri village resident Esther Siama says she fled her village last night and walked for several hours before reaching Ye Town earlier today. Speaking in her native Kakwa, Siama says several soldiers sexually assaulted women and abused other civilians.
What I saw very bad committed in our village is that once the soldiers reach a certain area, they thoroughly beat civilians, women were raped, and all domestic animals such as chickens, goats, cows, and even clothing are forcefully taken away from us. We sneak out from our village at night hours and walk throughout the bush and reached into Yei.
Siama says the latest peace agreement is not being respected as soldiers are still committing atrocities against civilians. A 60-year-old Morsak village resident who prefers to be identified only as Charles for fear of reprisal says he saw four dead bodies on the ground as he fled. Speaking in Kakwa, Charles says gunmen set the entire village on fire.
Once the soldiers approaches your house, they shoot bullets all over. And one of my elderly 70-year-old brother was tied down and threatened to be killed before we escaped into the bush. Secondly, they set our houses and put granaries on fire, and we spent our 4 days in the bush before we set our journey at night hours and reached Yei. Some people were shot dead, and even my own son was shot injured on the leg, and currently we are left barely with nothing.
Hilary Luata Deber, Bishop of Ye Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, who hails from Otogo County, has condemned the violence, saying it violates the heart of the River Atlas Peace Agreement.
The whole of south of Ye is actually in danger. People are fleeing. Let somebody not say this is rumors. A number of forces are engaged in serious fighting in the area. So it is only Ye now which is bleeding. Every part of South Sudan is preparing for the September Revitalized Agreement for Peace. Now, there are people in Yei who are carrying on the war. We want to say we, the people of Yei, refuse this, and we don't want any more fighting here.
Bishop Adeba is asking all sides to immediately end the fighting in Yei. Obed Taban, Deputy Chairman of the Yei River State Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, says hundreds of civilians who arrived on the outskirts of Yei Town today are in dire need of humanitarian assistance.
We have actually 200 plus. So still people are arriving, and then we are actually urging the humanitarian workers to come in so that they assist. Mostly food actually is the essential thing, and the medication. Most of them, they come without anything from their hands. They need saucepans, they need food, and then everything. Most of the population is women and the children.
Obed says the state government has no funds to provide humanitarian aid to the internally displaced persons. SPLA-IO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lampol Gabriel accuses the National Salvation Front of committing atrocities against civilians.
We know that the areas around Otogo are under the control of the NAS forces under the command of General Thomas Cirillo. The SPLA-IO is not responsible for what had happened, and we are already moving to our cantonment site.
NAS spokesman Samuel Subamanas denies his group mistreated civilians in areas under their control.
It is a crime for any National Salvation Front soldiers mistreating civilians, and it is against the laws of NAS.
South Sudan Army spokesman Brigadier General Santo Domich staunchly denies government forces looted villages or abused civilians.
I don't expect the forces from the SSPDF to be busy looting, villages at Otogo County.
For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the return of opposition leaders in Juba this week. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
are you satisfied with the schooling your children are getting?
I will say I'm not satisfied because the government schools are not well acquainted what they're doing. The teachers don't turn up. I know that maybe in private schools the fees are so high.
Yes, I am satisfied with the schooling because as an African child, the schools here in Africa, I see that they teach children a lot, mostly in the boarding schools. They teach them how to wash, how to take care of themselves while they're young.
Kind of satisfied because I would say that the schools that the children are in are teaching them the basics that they really need in life. And it's not only about majorly the educational aspect of it, but there are also other co-curriculum activities that they're getting involved in.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Leaders of the opposition groups who signed the September 12th revitalized peace deal are in Juba meeting with stakeholders overseeing the implementation of the agreement as the pre-transitional interim period enters its fifth month. Rebecca Nyandeng and Dr. Lama Kola arrived in Juba this week. Wake Simon Wudu has the story for VOA from Juba.
This is the second time Akol is visiting Juba since he signed revitalized peace deal in September last year. Akol left Juba in 2016 before fighting flared up between government forces and Riek Machar's bodyguards. He later abandoned his party, the Democratic Change, or DC, and formed the National Democratic Movement, which became part of an umbrella of political parties known as the South Sudan Opposition Alliance. Akol first returned to Juba from Khartoum in October last year to take part in celebrations marking the signing of the peace deal, but left shortly thereafter. Speaking to reporters upon his arrival at Juba International Airport Thursday, Akol said he was invited by Regional Bloc, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, to attend the launch of a peace campaign in Juba.
Strictly according to the agreement, all the leaders of the opposition were supposed to be here in May. But because we see that it is very important and essential and critical to send a message to the people that all the leaders are in one place, that is why we come to Juba from time to time.
The leader of the National Democratic Movement did not say how long he will stay in Juba this time. Presidential Advisor on Security Tuth Keu received a call at the airport. Speaking in Arabic, Keo, who is the chairperson of the National Pre-Transitional Committee, the body charged with supervising the implementation of the peace agreement during the 8-month pre-transitional period, says Akol will participate with the colleagues in addressing some of the challenges facing the implementation of the peace deal.
national Makana
Kingdom? All the committees of the National Pre-Transitional Committee are present in Juba. All other groups of Lemakol are also in Juba here to share with their colleagues in South Sudan about the launching of the peace campaign in Juba.
Akol notes that the implementation is behind schedule, but says he hopes to work with the other parties to quickly implement the activities scheduled for the pre-transitional period.
We have made an evaluation of the implementation process for the last 4 months. And 4 months is important because it is a half period of the pre-transition. We made an evaluation and we found out that there are many activities that are running behind schedule.
Akol was the agriculture and food security minister when he abandoned the position and traveled to Kenya. He is the latest among other top opposition leaders who have arrived in Juba recently to take part in meetings to bolster the implementation of the agreement. SPLM-IO Deputy Leader Henry Odwar and SSOA Chairman Gabriel Junction have been in Juba since October last year. Some members of the SPLM former detainees visited Juba in December and met with President Kiir to discuss the implementation of the unification of the ruling SPLM. European Union diplomat in Juba, Senator Wells, recently called on the EGA to ensure the agreement is implemented according to the agreed-to time frame. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Eight lawmakers representing South Sudan in the East African Legislative Assembly are in the capital Juba to talk about the benefits of joining the regional bloc. Many South Sudanese say the East African community only benefits other member countries with more developed economies. But one lawmaker argues South Sudan stands to gain a lot by joining the group. Winnie Chirino has more for VOA from Juba.
For the past 6 days, the lawmakers have been meeting with civil society activists, women's group, the business community, and area youth to point out the advantages of being an East African community member. Lawmaker Mokolia Kennedy Ayerson says several South Sudanese told the lawmakers it's too early for South Sudan to join the regional bloc.
The citizens of South Sudan have a lot of reservations simply because of the little non-tariff barriers that still exists in the community. An example of these non-tariff barriers are the issues of visas. South Sudanese can enter Rwanda, the United Republic of Tanzania, they can enter Burundi without the payment of visa. However, if they have to travel to Uganda and Kenya, they have to pay a visa. We follow this up with the relevant institutions, with the government of Uganda, with the government of Kenya. Their response was the principle of like, if we also South Sudan waive its visa, they will also waive their visas for us.
Lawmaker Gabriel Alak Garang says several unnecessary roadblocks along the major highway linking South Sudan to the Kenyan port of Mombasa, along with taxes levied on imported goods, forces traders to increase commodity prices. Garang says once South Sudan ascends to the East African community pillars, including the customs union, the common market, and the Monetary Union, South Sudanese will start to benefit from the country's membership in the East African community. When South Sudan joins the East African Community Customs Union, Garang says traders importing goods into South Sudan will be taxed only once, even if they are transporting goods across several borders.
With the customs union, there are efforts now being made so that we have our goods straight away from Mombasa. Normally they are building border post, whereby the officials from the Republic of Uganda, the Republic of South Sudan, they will be together in one place so that they clear the goods, so that there's no much time spent again in clearing goods.
But South Sudanese cannot benefit from joining the East African community until the government pays its annual membership fees to the regional bloc. Each member country is required to pay $8 million a year. But since joining the regional bloc 2 years ago, South Sudan has paid only $1 million. It still owes $15 million. Ayasan says lawmakers from other member states once raised a motion in the East African Legislative Assembly to have South Sudan suspended from the bloc until it pays its membership fees.
We have not been paying our contribution to the community. The East African community has around 17 institutions and organs of the community. South Sudan has the priority to get employment in those organs and institutions of the community. The non-payment of our obligation to the community means we cannot be employed to serve in the community. Non-citizens of South Sudan are the one working there.
The legislators say they will return to South Sudan in April to continue to educate South Sudanese across the country on the benefits of being a full member of the East African community. South Sudan joined the East African community in April 2016 as the sixth member state. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sereno in Juba.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Fi So Talaga by CJ Oman.
Fiso talaga Uda baba Fiso talaga Uda baba Ana indile kungisa Ana indile kungisa Kede wedila na fursa Finyar kukani ismu junuk Uwele duwa ufiza manzuruf Fijana tani ismu junuk Uwele duwa ufiza manhuruk Abutomu tumakawaja Umatomu tumajalaba Unyar kukde azuraba Azu school, azu medresa, bitalaya, azu mustashfa, azu jamewo, azu kenisa, mofru irabau.
We have been listening to CJ Oman with the song Fi So Talaga. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We appreciate you tuning in this evening. If you have comments on how you want us to run this show, send us your comments on Twitter or and our handle is at VOA South Sudan. If you are planning to be out of Juba town where you cannot listen to us on an FM radio station, you can still listen to us on a shortwave. Our frequencies are 11850 kilohertz, 13865 kilohertz, and 15108 kilohertz. Tune in again on Monday and have a safe weekend.